first sight, it looks like one of those cheap lawyer jokes. You know the kind I mean. You're trapped in a room with a mad dog, a rattlesnake, and a lawyer, and your gun has only two bullets. What do you do? Answer. Shoot the lawyer. Twice. Or, the trouble with the legal profession is that 99% of its members give all the others a bad name. Or, well, there are loads of them. Lawyers aren't liked for some reason. So what are we supposed to make of a conference for law students in Nebraska entitled Near Earth Objects, the Risks, Responses and Opportunities? Risks and responses I can see the point of, and we'll come to them shortly. But opportunities for lawyers? Near Earth objects are lumps of rock travelling at high speed, which hit our planet and can cause anything from shooting stars, by far the most common, to explosions and occasionally the destruction of most life on Earth, all depending on the size and speed of the rock. So where's the opportunity in that for a lawyer? Is he going to slap a restraining order on the rock? But then I took a closer look, and I noticed that the opening speaker at the conference is Rusty Schweikart, the Apollo mission astronaut who first piloted the lunar module in 1969, and nowadays chairs the B612 Foundation. The aim of this non-profit organisation is to alter the orbit of an asteroid in a controlled manner by 2015, proving that it can be done before it needs to be done, because the chances we'll be hit by a space rock big enough to kill a large fraction of life on Earth are 100%. It will happen. It has happened, many times. The only question is, when's the next big one going to hit? So the B612 Foundation wants us to demonstrate the technology to stop it happening before astronomers searching the skies sound the alarm. And everybody starts rushing around going, where did I put the spaceship? Where's the nuclear bomb? And has anybody seen Bruce Willis? Anyway, astronauts Rusty Schweikart and Ed Lou and scientists Pete Hutt and Clark Chapman founded the B612 Foundation, named for the home asteroid in the book The Little Prince, in October 2002. They also wrote a popular article called The Astronaut Tugboat for Scientific American in November 2003. Take a look at the links to these. I actually met Ed Lou a few years ago when I was in Houston, covering a week-long visit by Scottish school kids to the Johnson Space Center. I was due to interview the kids, their teachers and Deputy First Minister Jim Wallace, and I'd been sent out at short notice, so I hadn't done my homework. At dinner in the Hilton Hotel Clear Lake, across the highway from the Space Center, I was seated next to a slightly built, soft-spoken guy in a red t-shirt. We chatted. He asked what I did. I said I was a journalist. I asked what he did. He said he was an astronaut. My name's Ed Lou, he told me. I'm not long back from the International Space Station. Later that night, in a flat high up in the hotel, the Scottish contingent had laid on beer and biscuits for their NASA colleagues. It was my first night in Texas, so I stepped out onto the veranda to take a look. Way below, the palm-fringed lake was silver smooth in the moonshine. High above, a three-quarters moon was huge and bright in a star-sprinkled sky. The door from the flat opened, briefly filling the night air with Bob Dylan. And Ed Lou joined me in the narrow veranda. Earlier that day, the president had announced that NASA astronauts would be going back to the moon as a stepping stone for future human trips to Mars and beyond. Ed Lou and I looked up at our nearest neighbour, big and pale in the night sky, and I asked him if he'd like to be part of that first mission to land on its surface since 1972. To fly to the moon, he said, in a tone that implied no one in his right mind would miss that opportunity. That would be so cool. So anyway, where's the science in all this space rock stuff? A good way to find out, I always think, is to ask yourself, what is it I don't understand? That took me in two directions. The risks and the responses we mentioned earlier. I enjoyed the Bruce Willis film Armageddon, except for the bit where he broke his promise to his daughter and died to save the Earth. But there was a lot of ropey science in that story. So the first question I had was, would blowing the rock up with nuclear explosives actually work? The second question was, what are all alternatives? How else might you prevent a space rock that was headed directly for Earth from actually hitting us? Take a moment to think about this yourself. Discuss it with your colleagues. Make a list of all possible methods. Then, and only then, start thinking about how practical each of them is, about the advantages and the problems. In science, you always want to do that kind of thing in two stages. The creative, to generate as many ideas as possible, and then the critical, the analytic. So once you've done that, take a look at what scientists and engineers are saying about options and practicalities. You can understand most of it with just Newton's laws. The B612 website doesn't discuss options. They've been through that process already and decided the tugboat is the way to go. But other links do. Start with NASA's nice multimedia presentation, the first link in our resources section. Then maybe have a look at the astronaut tugboat. Once you've done all that, try to answer this. What are the problems with the nuclear option in Armageddon? Would it work? Would it definitely work? Because it has to be pretty definite. It's life on Earth that's at stake. There's so much more to talk about, but as usual, we're running out of time. What about risks from a large space shock? Well, they're small in anyone's lifetime, certainly. But you have to look not just at risks, but also consequences. Compare an unlikely event that kills 100 people with a very unlikely event that wipes out most life on Earth, and you get similar chances of dying. Take a look at Clark Chapman's paper, third link in our resources section, especially his table of chances of dying from different causes. Notice that you have about the same chance of dying in a plane crash as from a large space rock. Think about that. How does it compare with your chances of winning the lottery? The human brain doesn't handle risks and consequences well. We tend to panic about small risks that are brought to our attention forcibly and pay very little attention to large ones that are far more likely to get us. But that's a subject for another day. Have a look at the other items this week, which are varied, interesting and often surprising. The Love at First Sight story is another piece of research that shows attraction is often a sign of something happening at the level of our genes. People who talk about chemistry and relationships are quite literally correct. One of the most interesting pieces of research in this area in recent years showed that if we like the smell of someone, it's often a sign of variety in our genes, and hence fitness in any children we might have with each other. And finally, there's actually a wee link between the asteroid story and the attraction story. The Little Prince, where the B612 got its name, is a children's book with some profound messages. One of them in the original French, please excuse the Usher accent, goes like this. On ne voit bien qu'avec le cœur, l'essentiel est invisible pour les yeux. Which translated says, you can see clearly only with your heart. What's truly important is invisible to the eyes. It might sound like an anti-science sort of message, but I don't believe it is. That's all for this week at Real Science. Talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening, and keep thinking.